Well, coming up on today's show, a Tesla Model 3 is spied here in Europe, but with a different charging inlet. EVs and solar are fueling a battery storage boom, and BP is investing in more rapid charge points. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It's Friday, the 9th of November. It's Martin Lee here, and I've been through every EV story I can find today, so you don't have to. Thank you so much to MyEV.com for making this show with me. They are the place to go if you're buying and selling used cars in the USA. They've got loads on there now, from the cheapest little EV runarounds to the most gorgeous Tesla Model Xs and everything in between as well. It's a custom-built marketplace, is I think the lingo for buying and selling and learning about EVs as well. We'll kick off with a tweet today from Christian Hetzner about a development in the Dieselgate story, but at least here in Europe. Germany's car makers have finally agreed to cough up. They're going to pay 3,000 euros, up to 3,000 euros, per car, per vehicle, for a hardware retrofit. This is for Euro 5 diesels, but only for those in German cities which are affected by driving bans. So this isn't for everybody in Germany. But if you live in a German city that's put one of these new driving bans in place for Euro 5, then you get the 3,000 euro hardware retrofit on your diesel car. But not so fast. It only happens after they develop, certify, and build a new era of nitrous oxide catalytic converters. The time frame for that is 2021, by which time they are predicting that NOx levels in those cities will have dropped anyway below the mandated limits because of the bans which are in place. Therefore, when you follow that through, if the NOx levels have gone down, they don't have to follow through with the retrofits, so it all goes away and they don't incur any costs. This whole exercise is basically just for the TV cameras. Thank you, Christian, for your tweet and filling us in with the situation and the latest on Dieselgate. Well, you can always rely on Inside EVs to have the scoop on a story like this, and staying in Germany, because of course we're talking Grohmann Engineering, or Tesla Grohmann Engineering, as the company was soon renamed after Tesla bought it. It comes as no surprise that a Model 3, which has been spotted here in Europe, has got a different charging inlet. It's exciting news. The time seems to be quickly approaching for our friends across the pond, say Inside EVs, to get the Model 3. We've learned and reported on several instances that Tesla's gearing up for its Model 3 launch in Europe. Left-hand drive, of course. Here in the UK, we need a right-hand drive, but that's still many months away. Prior to this report, the Model 3 vehicles seen outside of North America have been US models, which were then imported into the country. Now we have our first spotting of the model with a Euro charging inlet. According to Stephen Loveday at Inside EVs, the only time that I've seen a Model 3 up close and in the flesh was earlier this year, and even then I was about to say I wasn't allowed to look behind the charging flap. I didn't even think of asking. The PR person from Tesla who was showing me around answered all of my questions, and if I'd have said what's behind there, I'm sure she would have said, well, it's the US, it's the proprietary Tesla plug because it's a US car. So they weren't hiding anything, I just never thought to look, but pretty sure it wouldn't have been anything else apart from the US spec. Well, the Model 3 that we're talking about here was photographed by a Facebook user, Detlef Knobloch, or Nobby, and it was first shared on the Tesla Model 3 Facebook group over here. The images were taken at Tesla Grohmann Engineering in Germany, and that's the company they bought in 2017 last year for $100 million. So that makes sense. Over here, Tesla use the Type 2 socket, otherwise known as the Type 2 Menekes socket. The big question is, when you look at these pictures, it is just very much the Type 2 socket. There's lots of space beneath. And so people in the comments of Inside EVs are saying, actually, is there a blanking plate below the Type 2? Because below the Type 2 socket, there is loads of room, if you wanted, for the two DC parts of a CCS plug. Now, if Tesla chose to ship their European Model 3s with the CCS combo plug, all of a sudden, now you're talking, it would, in theory, allow you to use all the superchargers, all of the rapid chargers over here that use CCS combo, AC, and I don't know how quickly, how fast they would enable, but even if it was, say, 22 kilowatt AC, That would be amazing. You'd pretty much be able to charge anywhere apart from the CHAdeMO connector. And even then, you can use a CHAdeMO adapter with the Tesla Model 3. Although, I believe, and somebody will know more than me who's way more of a Tesla expert than I am, it needs to be software enabled if you use the adapter on CHAdeMO. And at the moment on the Model 3, if you do that, there's a message on the center console saying something along the lines of Tesla has not enabled this feature yet or cannot charge over CHAdeMO. So at some point, Tesla may well enable that, do a software update and enable that. So it would be amazing news if there's a CCS combo plug over here. It would open up a whole new raft of places that you could charge on DC charging here and all around Europe, actually. And it would be incredible. Or we may just get the Type 2 socket that you would normally find on a Tesla here in Europe. It's worth saying, for people who, in reply, would say, well, they wouldn't change what they do just for one market, they do in China. And it's a different, it's an extra socket on the side of cars sold in China for their GBT plug, which is pretty much the only thing they use there. Moving on, actually, and staying with Tesla really quickly, they had their new board chair announced. The board of directors announced that Robin Denham, well, she's been appointed as chair of the board, effective immediately. She'll be able to devote her full attention to the Tesla chair role. She's leaving her current role as CFO and head of strategy at Telstra. That's Australia's largest telecommunications company. She's got a six-month notice period to work out first, though. Then she'll become full-time with Tesla to ensure a smooth transition during the time. They're going to use Elon, or she can use Elon Musk as a resource and provide any support that she requests in her role as chairperson. Well, Robin's going to continue to provide the necessary focus and time to Telstra during her notice period, and she will temporarily step down as chair of Tesla's audit committee. Robin has served on the Tesla board. She's been with Tesla as an independent director for the last 4 years. Her global experience in both Australia and Silicon Valley encompasses leadership roles across Telstra, Juniper Networks, and Sun Microsystems. So she knows the technology. Well, she added, and I quote, "I believe in this company, I believe in its mission, and I look forward to helping Elon and the team achieve sustainable profitability and long-term shareholder value," end quote. Elon Musk chipped in and said this, and I quote, "Robin has extensive experience in both the tech and auto industries. She's made significant contributions as the Tesla board member over the past 4 years and helping us become a profitable company. I look forward to working even more closely with Robin as we continue accelerating the advent of sustainable energy," end quote. Well, moving on, and electric vehicles and solar are fueling a battery storage boom. A dramatic rise in demand for electric cars and solar power could see a peak in demand for battery storage. It's going to cost over $1 trillion, according to one study, globally in the next 22 years. Bloomberg New Energy Finance are behind this. Reported in the Daily Mail today, they've revealed new figures showing the global energy storage market is going to grow to 942 gigawatts by 2040, double the US's energy consumption for the entire year back in 2008. Well, providing the infrastructure to meet this demand is going to cost $1.2 trillion in the world by 2040. The long-term energy storage outlook report is what we're talking about here. And it says that the cost of the utility-scale batteries, the lithium-ion storage batteries, is going to fall even further by another 52% by 2030. According to this in-depth report by Bloomberg, cheap battery costs will mean renewables, solar and wind, can fuel the grid even at nighttime or on a quiet day. Governments across the world are spurring demand for electric cars and solar power. And one of the things that's always interesting is when you get these reports, and by the way, Bloomberg New Energy Finance know a lot what they're talking about. They have been at times, and I want to make sure that I'm fair to them in their reports, maybe not as optimistic as they could have been. In other words, the market moved even quicker than they have predicted over the years, which is a good thing, right? So Edward Fenster is the chief exec of San Francisco-based rooftop solar company Sunrun. I said this, and I quote, "Storage is so sensibly the next step in the evolution of renewable energy. If we're going to get to 100% renewables, we'll need storage," end quote. And so when you look at those numbers that are predicting 2030, 2040, it's so hard with any accuracy to predict a market that is moving so quickly. And battery storage costs for EVs, even in the last few years, have come down from $1,000 per kilowatt hour. So you take a very small battery, the little 22 kilowatt battery in that Leaf that is sitting next door to me, because I'm in the back of my garage at the moment, which is converted into the home studio. And the other side of this partition wall here, with less heating, I must admit, the Zoe is colder than me. The other is a 22 kilowatt battery, 22 kilowatt hour battery. And so only a few years ago, that was £22,000 worth of battery. And now, at least at cell level, all reports seem to agree, and Elon says by the end of the year, it's gone down to $100 per kilowatt hour. At cell level, not at pack level with all the other ancillaries that need to be added. But that's coming, right? So when it's dropped that quickly, who knows how quickly the market will change. If I had any spare money at all, there's the beginning of a sentence. If I had any spare money, if I was an investor, and I'm not, by the way, but if I had a spare thousand, £10,000, dollars, whatever, I would invest it in battery storage. Not on a will I make a profit by Christmas, but on a 10 to 15 to 20 year, if you're investing in battery storage companies, my big prediction is, this isn't financial advice, you can't go wrong, because battery storage has to be the future. Not because of an ideological thing about renewables versus fossil fuels, but because fossil fuels will run out. And it's one of those things. It's like, I'm not saying this because I'm anti-oil and anti-gas, because they will run out. It's like people go, yeah, but you're anti-diesel. Yes, I admit, diesel's not my favourite thing in the world. But on the practical level, they're going to run out. We need an alternative. Let's do it now rather than later. And therefore, storage has to be the way forward. Man, it's going to be such an exciting when EVs and storage and solar and wind all come together. Man, the future is going to be so exciting. An exciting time for a previous guest of this podcast. A couple of weeks ago on Saturday, we caught up with Charlie Jardine, who's the founder of EO Charging here in the UK, and eMotor Works, which is a subsidiary of Enel's, or ENEL, Enel? Enel's Advanced Energy Services Global Business, and a leading provider of intelligent and cloud-connected smart grid charging solutions, has partnered with EO Charging, the UK charging manufacturer here, where they're one of the UK's leading domestic and fleet EV charging manufacturers. They've partnered for a new smart home charger. The new solution is going to integrate the technology from eMotor Works. It's called JuiceNet. And what it is it's a cloud-based platform, and it kind of aggregates and manages what the charging station needs for your car. And it puts that clever stuff inside EO's Mini Pro charger. And how they've made a wall charger so small, literally only just bigger than the plug, makes you wonder, why are all the other chargers so much bigger? I mean, it's how does it work? It's tiny. And they've managed to pack all the technology into this. And it means that you can now have a smart, grid-connected home charging station. Not the first product on the market, clearly, that does this. There's competitors out there, but it's more good news for a homegrown UK company and a US company as well. Expanding on the success of the EO Mini home charger, which is currently the smallest fast charger on the market, the new Mini Pro with JuiceNet offers customers multiple benefits. You can schedule your charge time, send alerts and reminders about optimizing the charging when the grid is cheapest and cleanest overnight as well. You can use more green energy from the grid. So overnight, when everyone's asleep, things like the base load. So I don't get too geeky here about the power grid, but whilst coal-powered stations and gas power stations, you can fire them up and you can shut them down according to as you need, the nuclear base load stays exactly the same. You don't turn a nuclear power station up or down, for instance. You got that base load from nuclear, which some would say is clean, some would say is not clean, depending on if you look at whole life, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this isn't the time for that debate, but overnight, the grid is arguably cleaner because there aren't those expensive coal and gas-powered plants fired up for the peak time when everyone's cooking their tea. And so overnight, if it's windy overnight, you've got the baseload nuclear as well, and the grid is greener, well, less CO2, let's say that, rather than greener. This new smart charging solution can charge then. You can look at all your historical charging data as well via your dashboard on your phone, your tablet. Great for fleet managers wanting to reimburse employees for your costs of charging at home and lower driving costs as well. So you can charge your car if you're on a time of use tariff. And they're not popular yet, but they're getting there. More and more people are getting time of use tariffs, which are cheaper overnight. And you can charge your car when it's cheaper. Well, Valery Miftakov is the founder and CEO of eMotorworks. And I said this, and I quote, by participating in energy services like demand response, drivers can reduce EV operating costs and relieve pressure on the grid at times of stress. We look forward to promoting EO Charging's JuiceNet-powered products alongside our own JuiceBox EV charging stations to support smart grid charging across the UK and other European countries. As we expand our European business, we believe JuiceNet will be a significant smart grid enabler for energy companies and authorities to ensure that EVs play a beneficial role in our energy systems at scale. A link to that press release in the show notes. Moving on to Ford. And Ford, which is struggling, I think fair to say, with a depressed stock price at the moment and facing constant questions about what's the business doing? You're not making cars anymore. You're focusing on trucks. Are you making EVs? You're not making EVs. Now they're going to try and be a scooter company. According to Jalopnik, they've bought, in a blog post, Ford said that they have acquired a startup called Spin. They make all-electric scooters that you can drive around and ride around town. They're dockless. Like its counterparts, Spin offers the scooters at a flat fee of $1.15 per minute when they're in use. Good luck to Ford trying to find a bit of money in scooters. Now, moving on to charging, and a very little use to me with the Renault Zoe, which is AC charging only, but of huge interest to pretty much everybody else. InstaVolt, makers of DC rapid chargers here in the UK, which have connected as well, by the way, with ChargePoint in the US, they've just hit 200 chargers installed. Currently 10,888 public chargers across the whole of the UK here. The majority are slow, and only about 1,800 of them are public chargers, are rapid chargers, requiring only a few minutes to add enough range to get to the place you're going to. You haven't got to get a full tank just to finish off your journey. InstaVolt believes that rapid charging will become the principal means of public charging when you're not at home or at work. Well, CEO Tim Payne said, in order for drivers to drive an EV in the same way they're used to driving a conventional vehicle, they need to be able to recharge quickly and continue their journey. By using the InstaVolt network of rapid chargers, drivers can be confident of a reliable experience and being back on the road in minutes. And one of the things I see a lot on Twitter, by the way, people saying because the hardware is good, it always works. Because it's maintained, they actually have a proper maintenance schedule for these rapid chargers, they always work. And because they're contactless, so you haven't got to faff about with apps and RFID cards. You simply plug your car in, tap your credit card, your debit card, your bank card on the front of it. It's contactless and you can be charged. Not the cheapest chargers to use. I believe, I should have checked my facts before I opened my mouth, I believe it's 35 pence per kilowatt hour on a promotional rate, if that promotional rate is still going. You know what? Let's get InstaVolt on the podcast in the next few weeks. I'll shoot them an email, see if they want to participate on a Saturday special. We'll find out more about them. Moving on to BP now, and company car and van drivers can soon be paying for petrol, diesel and electricity on their single fuel card if they stop at BT service stations. BP has said it wants to start rolling out ultra-fast EV chargers at its 1,300 service stations beginning next year, according to Fleet News. After buying ChargeMaster, which was the UK's largest EV charging network, they are now the leading manufacturer of charge points as well. They make their own chargers for, I don't know if it's ever been confirmed, but I think it was £130 million last year. The combined use card is a logical step, especially, I guess, if you have a plug-in hybrid and you've got to fill up with some electricity and petrol or diesel. One card at your BP stations. It's also looking at integrating EV charging into their app, which is called BP Me. Well, David Martell is the chief exec of BP ChargeMaster, the newly renamed BP ChargeMaster, said the company was investing £25 million over the next year and expected the rollout of ultra-fast chargers, which can charge a car in a matter of minutes to be completed within 3 years. As well as manufacturing charge points and installing them themselves, BP Chargemaster runs the UK's biggest, largest public network of charge points. It's called Polar, and it currently operates 6,500 charge points. That's about 43% of the UK's publicly available chargers. He said, Martel, by the way, said it was increasing its reach for Polar chargers at a rate of 150 every single month. I didn't know it was growing that fast. Fantastic news. Well done to you, BP Chargemaster. Hopefully, there is some going to be, with all the new chargers going in, I would expect the brand to be cleared up a little bit. I don't know, by the way. I would expect the brand to be BP Chargemaster, because why would BP buy it and not stick their name in it? Because that's the brand they've spent many, many years building. Well, for good or bad, actually, a lot of EV drivers I've seen online push back against it. Again, ideologically against an oil company being the one that provides your electricity. I mean, not too many. It's kind of just a few people that are vocal on Twitter about it, but it's kind of interesting. And finally, Electrive has some clarity on the future plans for BMW, who have confirmed their upcoming factory in Erfurt in 2021 is going to supply batteries for the iNEXT. The factory is going to be CATL, Contemporary Amperex Technology Limited, I think. Again, this podcast is full of things that I should have looked up first, but I'm 99% sure that's what CATL stands for. It's going to deliver battery cells worth 4 billion euros to BMW as part of this new agreement, which was signed a few months ago. So that means that BMW also confirmed the i3, the Mini Electric, the iX3, the i4 and the iNEXT. That's 5 fully electric models available from the manufacturer. It does mean, though, an end to the i3, which has been subject to speculation, is not going to be at least within the next few years. A new i3 is due out very soon with the third iteration of a larger battery, 120 amp hour battery. And so, at least for this model, it's not going anywhere yet. The next few years, it will be supplied by these brand new batteries. The CEO, Harald Kruger, said this, and I quote, "With the launch of the BMW i3, the BMW Group established itself as an early pioneer in the field of electric mobility. Electrification is one of the key pillars of BMW Group's strategy, number one to next. By 2021, the BMW Group is going to have on sale the i3, the Mini Electric, full electric Mini, made here in Oxford in the UK, the BMW iX3, basically the X3 with a full electric battery, the BMW i4, Schwing, amazing, love it, and the BMW iNEXT. By 2025, oh, by the way, he didn't say Schwing, that's me adding comment. He continues to say, by 2025, the number is set to grow to at least 12 models, including plug-in hybrids whose electrically powered range will increase significantly in the coming year. BMW Group's electrified product portfolio will be 25 models. Well, that's the end of the news today. It was another good episode today. You know what? Of all the news going on right now, there's so much just positive stuff. It's a real injection of positivity into the mornings. Otherwise, I flick through my newsfeed and it's kind of bleak at times, isn't it? Not when it comes to EVs and solar and wind and storage and electric mobility. Well, thank you very much to myev.com for setting this week's question of the week, which is this. What's the ideal way for you to be driving an electric car? Is it, or was it, to buy one? Was it to lease one? Is it a long-term rental? Is it to borrow friends? Is it to subscribe? You can get subscription models these days as well. And maybe car sharing is the best for you. How did you get into an EV? Or in the future, if you're still EV curious and you're not driving one yet, what would be the best model for you? If you live in a city, would it be car sharing? Email me, hello@evnewsdaily.com. We'll read the answers out on Sunday, as always. Leave a comment on Facebook and YouTube if you'd rather that, or the blog has a feedback form. Thank you to 115 patrons of the show who support me and making this program. If you'd like to be one of them, check out patreon.com/evnewsdaily. There are 290 previous shows online for free where you get your podcasts from. And if you want to hit the subscribe button, you're more than welcome to. It means you get every podcast first and free and automatically. And it would mean a lot if you could leave a little rate and review as well sometime as well, just with your thoughts and a little star rating. If you want to catch up on the socials over the next day or so, please do on Facebook, LinkedIn and Twitter. In the meantime, have a wonderful day and I'll catch you tomorrow.